35.
It would appear that I am not the only monster whisking through time, Langdon says. The words are loud enough for all to hear, but I think his inner monologue has just escaped the confines of his mind. Perhaps there's a part of him that knows what he is doing here is wrong.
The fuck is that?
Kuzneski asks, leaning closer to the screen, recounting the fingers on the massive hand. I surprise everyone, including myself, by providing an answer.
Tsul Kalu.
Langdon turns to me, waiting for more. A Cherokee god of the hunt. It was buried at the bottom of the mountain in a clearing not far from my home.
Since when are gods buried in Appalachia?
Kuzneski asks, his distaste for the region shining through. The stigma around Appalachia has nothing to do with the landscape or the people who called it home before coal mining's slow demise left people jobless, hungry, homeless, and desperate. And if you spend more than a few minutes in Black Creek, you'd realize that stigma is based on a very small portion of the population. Most, Langdon silences me with a raised hand. While I appreciate your loyalty to your home and to this company, I'm afraid off-topic tangents at this crucial time will just not do. Tsul Kalu. Tell me more. After one of the last jumps back, the burial mound was gone. I point to the screen, which I reckon means the man on whom the legend was based could have been alive and taken along with us.
That's not a man, dude, Kuzneski says. Those fingers are like bananas, like big fucking bananas.
Well, yeah, I say. He was a giant. Langdon's eyes widen. The burial mound, was it present in your time? Stories about the clearing being an Indian burial ground were passed down by my family, but the mound was never there. Not in my lifetime or my father's. Why? There are legends, not just in Appalachia, but throughout North American Indian tribes, of a race of giant men with six fingers and six toes, double rows of teeth, dark red hair, slanted eyes. I nod. But they've never been more than rumors, legends.
Because there is no evidence, he says. Not because it doesn't exist, but because it was gathered up and sequestered by people who feared what it meant for humanity.
Who would gather up giant skeletons?
Kuzneski asks. The Smithsonian Institute, Future Langdon says. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but most conspiracy theories are born out of a nugget of truth. In my experience, even an atom-sized bit of truth leads to amazing discoveries. I'm about to unleash a little sarcasm, but I'm distracted by a surfacing memory. Not of an event, but of a passage from the Bible. I spent my childhood ignoring sermons, but keeping an open Bible on my lap. I would read what I considered the interesting bits. The fall of Jericho, David and Goliath, pretty much all of Revelation, and a certain passage in Genesis that always sparked my imagination. Nephilim. Langdon nods.
That is one theory, yes. Demon, father, demigods living among us.
He turns to the screen. And dying among us. Nephilim or not, at least you know it can be killed. Damn it. This is why I'm here. Why he's taking a risk with me. He needs someone with my skill set to kill the one thing Lefty perceives as a threat to his personal mission. I'm about to preempt his request for aid with a hell no, when one of the drone pilots says,
Sir!
At first, I can't tell which of the men has spoken until he adds,
I might have something here. What is it?
Langdon asks, as we crowd around the man looking at the footage from his aerial drone.
Hold on, there's a fire too, I think.
The column of smoke is easy to see. It's a campfire, I guess. Someone is trying to stay alive in this frozen hell. The drone maintains its altitude, some 200 feet above the mountain slope, flying closer to the smoke column. The camera angles down, revealing three people huddled around what is closer to a bonfire than a campfire. Remembering how cold it was out there, I'm not surprised. It would take a significant heat source to combat the Ice Age chill. Whoever built it knew what they were doing, digging a large pit first, big enough for the blaze and several people to escape the wind. But it's a stopgap measure. The snow will melt out from under the fire, extinguishing the flames. How long until the next flux? I ask.
What makes you think this isn't our final destination?
Langdon asks, showing a complete lack of concern for the people trying to fend off frostbite. I consider it for a moment. The cozy foyer seems to fit the theme, but not even a madman would want to live atop a frozen mountain. How long?
I'm not sure, he says. It's not an exact science, but I know the duration between the gravity waves is growing longer, carrying us further back with each... what did you call them? Flux? I rather like that.
7 years does change a lot, I think, remembering the younger Langdon's sour face when he adopted the term.
I'm sorry, he says. I'm talking over you without explaining.
Don't bother, I say. Not only do I have a pretty good idea how all this is happening, I also know how to stop it. I just need the chance. To him, I just sound uninterested because I am. Big picture or not, the lives of the people below the drone concern me, in part because of my humanitarian instincts, but also because I recognize one of them. Enola sits by the fire, hands raised toward the flames. She's got the shotgun and the Winchester with her. I'm not sure who the other two people are, but their clothing suggests they're some of Boone's crew.
Just let me get out there, I say. Those people, which one? Langdon asks, leaning closer to the display. Which one of them do you know?
I don't see any point in lying. Enola's association with me was short-lived. He has no reason to fear her. The problem is he has no reason to risk resources to bring her in from the cold either. I tap my finger on the screen, pointing out Enola. Behind me, the screen Nazi groans when my finger leaves another smudge.
It's not even your screen, I grumble, and then I say, her name is Enola. She is a Cherokee Indian. She told me about Sul Kalu.
With that, I've solidified her value as an intel source. The giant stalking at Dell is a bump in the temporal road that he had not accounted for. His drone army can deal with any human threat they encounter, but Sul Kalu, if that's who's really out there, has proven to be too much for his machines. If she had information about the giant, especially how to kill him, then that's intel worth retrieving.
Do you have any transports? I ask.
For this terrain?
Langdon asks, shaking his head. She will need to be rescued, on foot.
I'll need a team, I say without hesitation.
Hail to the no, Kuzneski says.
I can't tell if he's still playing his part, or if that was a genuine reaction. The threat is real. Reaching Enola and those people is going to hurt. But it's a risk I'm willing to take, and I know a few other brave souls who will take the risk with me.
People I trust, I say. Just a handful, to watch my back. If that thing is out there, I'm going to need...
Langdon waggles a hand at me, already nodding. He levels his gaze at his Kuzneski.
Get him who and what he needs, then... How does the saying go? Grow a dick and go with him.
I'm not sure that's actually a saying,
Kuzneski says, and when Langdon glowers at him, he adds,
But yes, sir.
The drone operator says. When I look back to the screen, Enola and the two people are frantically dumping snow on the fire, extinguishing it. Without the heat, they won't last long. So what could?
Do you have audio?
The operator yanks his headset cord out, and the audio feed switches over to a pair of speakers. A haunting howl fills the command center.
Sul Kalu.
I grip the pilot's shoulder.
Take the drone down.
Do it, Langdon orders, willing to take the risk for what Enola knows. The drone drops down through the leafless trees, maneuvering its way through the web of branches. 20 feet from the ground, sliding through the steam cast off by the now soggy fire pit, the drone comes to a stop. Framed in the center of its lens is Enola, shotgun raised up. She holds her fire, knowing the drone might not be a threat, but that firing will further attract the attention of a very real threat.
How do I talk to her? I ask.
The drone operator reaches out and toggles a mic. Despite being in VR, muscle memory guides his hand. I lean closer to the mic.
Enola.
William?
She sounds hopeful and in doing so has given away her closeness to my father.
Owen, I say. Listen, I'm coming for you. Just try to stay hidden. Try to stay alive.
A howl replies, louder than the first. Inhuman.
We can't stay here,
Enola says to her companions. Go. While the two strangers make a break for it, leaving easy to follow tracks in the deep snow, she turns back to the drone.
Hurry.
She glances toward the sound of cracking wood, eyes flaring wide. Then she bolts. The drone tracks their flight for a moment and then spins toward the sound of yet another roar. The pilot shouts in surprise as what looks like a stone-tipped spear impales the flying machine. Gears grind as the drone drops from the sky, landing upside down, the camera still sending its live feed. The sound of large feet crunching through the snow booms from the speakers.
We watch in silence, transfixed as a massive foot with six toes steps in front of the camera.
Holy shittlesticks,
Kuznetsky whispers. The drone is lifted off the ground, passing by the mostly naked form of a massive man, covered in thick tufts of red hair. Sasquatch, I think, trying to make sense of the monstrous form by identifying it as a modern myth rather than an ancient one. A moment later, when the thing opens its mouth, I know I'm wrong. Its two rows of large teeth, the canines as large as my thumbs, crunch down on the drone, killing the feed, and my hopes of finding Enola alive. But I'm still going to try. I clutch Langdon's shirt and pull him close. Is there any way to get there faster? He glances at my hands. I release him. Then he turns to Kuznetsky. See to his needs, show him the tunnels. Then to me. If you find yourself in dire circumstances, there will be no help coming. Wouldn't expect it, I say. And I head for the door, Kuznetsky at my back, and what seems like a fairly good chance of a horribly painful death ahead of me.